At this time, the chair recognizes Representative Heaton for consideration of Senate File 446.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The amendment that we have before us today is a strike after amendment to Senate File 446. The amendment spends almost $1.7 billion from the general fund for the Department of Aging, Veterans Affairs, Public Health, and Human Services. Much of the amendment follows the budget recommendations of the governor. There are a few areas that I want to bring to your attention. One item that I am happy we are able to work out in this funding for early childhood Iowa areas. Since we created empowerment in 1998, this budget has provided TANF funds to local areas for use in providing child care and other programs for children aged 0 to 5. Using TANF funds means that these local areas have to fill out a sizable amount of paperwork for the federal government, and that has a significant burden on early childhood Iowa areas. This year, we have been able to swap these TANF funds for general funds, child care assistance funds. This move will reduce the bureaucratic burden in our local areas. The amendment includes the FY supplemental appropriations for Medicaid and adopted subsidy in Medicaid. There are few line items in this year's bill as we have moved much of the mental health funding into Medicaid, since the state is directly paying the non-federal share for these services. We have implemented most of the governor's cost containment initiatives with the exception of the chiropractic piece. And also, we have eliminated the site of service cost containment measure implemented a couple of years ago. There were a number of issues that made this overly burdensome to providers and the department. We have funded the nursing home rebase at the governor's level, which I believe is the largest increase in funding for nursing homes in my 15 years serving on this budget subcommittee. We have also provided pharmacists a 1.5% rate increase. And we provide initial funding to help families of children with autism. In his budget, the governor provided some of the DHS institutions with funding for increased food, utility, and transportation costs. The amendment provides funding to address these costs at all DHS facilities. We have also provided additional funds to the Civil Commitment Unit for costs related to the population growth at that facility. Mr. Chairman, those are the highlights of the amendment, and I would be happy to address any questions.
I was just going to say, I would assume those were your opening remarks on the amendment, but I will recognize you for further opening remarks on Amendment 1973, if you see fit. Before there's any questions.
How do I do?
Representative Heaton moves. No, I'm kidding.
No, but I'm sorry I didn't go through the process.
That's fine. Are there any questions on Amendment 1973 to Senate File 446? Chair recognizes Representative Rennie Marquardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if Mr. Heaton would yield to a question, please.
Well, certainly.
Can you tell me the reasoning behind the cost containment measures on the C-section
cost
area?
Cost containment measures.
Yeah, when dealing with non-medical C-sections.
On C-sections?
Cesarean sections or C-sections.
Yeah, like can you C-sections put, can you, in birth?
Yeah.
Well, we would like to put a restriction on and discourage. Let's put it this way: we'd like to discourage the doctor from performing a C-section. We'd like to reduce those C-sections.
Are there doctors and women across the state of Iowa who are getting these? I had one, and I don't know if there's people signing up for these surgeries that are difficult to heal from. Is this an epidemic? Is this a problem? Is this why we're looking for cost savings here? Like, what's going on that this needs to be addressed in this bill?
We think that there was a point, that there got to be a point in time before we put in the cost containment measure that there has been a problem in doctors just going ahead and performing C-sections unnecessarily.
So surgeries, that they are providing unnecessary surgeries, is that what you're saying?
Elective. Well, it does involve surgery, yeah.
And do you have numbers on, like, the amounts or rates or of?
I can get those for you. I mean, I'm not walking around with all those numbers in my head. I just know that we would like to make sure that we are encouraging people to not promote the use of unnecessary C-sections.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Heaton. I just would like to end that with, you know, I really think, as being a mother who was on the delivery table, knowing that that is really something that is a discussion between myself and my family and my doctor, and not necessarily something that, you know, I think we should be looking at cost containment for here at in our Appropriations Committee meeting today. It seems foolish to me, and I thank you for some of your reasoning behind it. I'm going to have to look for more information on that. Thank you.
Chair recognizes Representative Heddens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Heaton, I was wondering if you'd yield to a few questions.
Yes.
Thank you. I know we just went through this process just, what, an hour ago in our sub-appropriations committee. Besides the financial areas that I do have several questions on and comments on, but is there some policy language that's in the bill as well that you could speak to, what was added into the bill?
Well, I think we do have some policy language in the bill. Is there a certain type of policy you want me to refer to?
Yes, I'm specifically looking on page, at bottom of page 21 and the top of page 22.
Okay.
Dealing
21,
with medical,
yes,
assistance.
For some reason, I had to turn right to that spot.
You could read my mind, I guess.
What we are saying here at on the bottom of page 21 and going to page 22, down to line 9, we are saying that with hospitals, Medicaid will not reimburse hospitals for abortions performed, but hospitals can continue to get Medicaid reimbursement for other services. So we are saying that hospitals could continue to, if they choose, to perform abortions, but we will not be paying any Medicaid money for those abortions.
Okay,
then we refer to, we go on to page 22, and we talk about other providers, and to say to get reimbursed by Medicaid for any services that they provide, they cannot perform abortions.
Okay, so this would go directly against the federal Hyde Amendment then, in regards to a woman who is a victim of a crime, rape, incest, and then to save her life. Am I correct?
It is. I think that we have chosen to take this position, and this is irregardless of the Hyde Amendment or any of the discussion to that end, we are taking this position and standing firm.
Okay, so I just want to make sure it's clear. So a woman who's been a victim of a crime or to save her life cannot receive a life-saving measure. I remember reading this summer the article about the woman in Ireland. I believe she was...
She can receive that procedure, but we will not pay for it.
So the hospital would have to absorb the cost, is that what you're saying?
Probably.
And would this jeopardize our Medicaid funding if we're going against that federal Hyde Amendment? That's what I'm trying to figure out here. Because under federal law, you're to provide those services to women. And if they are not provided to them, I believe that jeopardizes close to $3 billion in Medicaid dollars. And I'm just trying to figure out, looking at your budget and all the areas that you want to provide services to, how do you do that when you're losing all that money? How do you provide food for seniors? How do you provide guardianship? How do you provide childcare? How do you provide family assistance, adoption subsidy? How do you do that at that level of loss?
North Dakota is continuing to provide all those services, and they have this language. And they've continued to provide those services for many, many years. That law has been on their books for quite some time. I'm not quite sure what the state of Texas is doing along these lines. They're also proposing or have language like this. And whether or not they're picking up the... No, I mean, they're continuing to offer all the services that you say they can't offer, and they're offering them too. It's a controversial subject that the federal government has yet to step in and say, your Medicaid money is gone. They have not done that yet. And we are joining the challenge.
I have some concerns on the direction that you've gone here. I do think it puts women's lives potentially at risk here and jeopardizes a significant amount of money. We are talking about doing our mental health redesign and our health care. I'm not quite sure how we're able to do that with this sitting out there. Getting back to some of the numbers within the budget, though, No, we talked about this during our subcommittee meeting, but for an example, under the Department on Aging, the Senate increased an allocation by $250,000 to meet the unmet needs. And those are our local agencies that are able to provide meals to our seniors. Sequestration is hitting, and Meals on Wheels, for example, is getting hit pretty hard, and seniors will be cut in that arena. Your budget does not increase the funding to address any of that. Am I correct on that?
That's correct.
Okay. Tobacco use and prevention. We've done a lot within the state of Iowa to reduce smoking within the state. I know that there are that we're wanting to continue on that track to eliminate smoking or to help individuals never take up that habit. I thought that Representative Forbes in our subcommittee meeting made some very good comments in regards to, as a practicing pharmacist, he sees a number of individuals that come into his pharmacy seeking some of those patches to stop smoking, to help cease their smoking, and because they're not able to afford it, the state used to provide more dollars for that, but because we haven't increased that so that they have more access to it, he's now seeing a number of those individuals that have greater health conditions such as COPD, and that is costing the state much more. So that gives me some cause for concern and would hope through discussions that we can increase that allocation. I know the CDC recommends for prevention and cessation, we'd be closer to the 36 million mark. I still think we're woefully short with the allocations that are within here. Child welfare programs. I know that the agencies have been requesting and needing that 5% provider rate. I've talked to the ones in my area. I have Lutheran Services in Iowa and YSS, for example, in my area, but I've also talked to Orchard Place, Tanager Place, all the other ones, Four Oaks throughout the state. They are in desperate need of that provider rate increase to maintain the staff that work with children throughout the state. I know that you and I went to a meeting this summer at least once, if not twice. They're not only in the position right now where they are closing some of their programs, they're shutting down altogether because they just cannot maintain that. I'm just wondering if you could speak to that. I noticed that you did not increase the rate that they had been requesting on that. I was just wondering if you could speak to why not at this time, and is that kind of on your horizon to potentially go down that direction to increase that provider rate?
Well, I think to deal with the target that I was given, there were certain things that I could do and certain things that I couldn't. And this, I mean, I am confident that we'll be able to address a lot of the things that are here that you could come, you could spend the next hour telling me where we're short and why, and your disappointment, and that's fine. I there are a lot of things in here that I share along with you, but with the resources that I was given, I just said, and seeing what the Senate had handed over to us, I knew that there would be a difference and we would be going to conference and we would have then finally a discussion about what we would be able to do and what we would not.
Okay, thank you, Representative Heaton. I'm going to encourage my caucus and actually everyone here to vote no on the amendment today and then on final passage once it becomes the bill as well. There are several reasons for my disagreement on that. One is the language that you currently policy language that you have in the bill, but also the areas that we don't see an increase in funding. I've done a lot of work over the last couple of years in regards to senior issues. I want to make sure that our seniors are getting those meals. And for us to kind of disregard that sequestration is going on, sequestration unfortunately is happening, and I think it is our responsibility as a state to make sure that we are helping those in our local communities. So I would like to see those needs met and other areas where sequestration is hitting, that we are ensuring that. The Office of Substitute Decision Maker was something we had in the budget several years ago at a very small amount, was kind of to get started. I know the Senate was trying to move that statewide. One of the issues that was talked about back then was Adelissa, and had some of those individuals, it's in the paper right now as well, but had some of those individuals who were from out of state, Texas or other particular areas, had someone here to make some of those decisions because they didn't have a family member or didn't have a family member within the state who could provide some of that oversight. Not having, or moving towards having this program, in particular having it statewide, I think it sets us up for potentially having another Adelissa or something else pop up within the state. So I do want to see that we are addressing that as well. I want to continue to make Iowa healthy. We just voted on in our committee yesterday a health care proposal, and while I may not have disagreed or may not have agreed with the proposal that came out of committee, it is something that we are working towards, and we want to make sure people are on the path of being healthy. We want to make sure folks that want to quit smoking or to prevent them from ever taking up the habit, that we are allocating the appropriate dollars to assist them in doing that. Mental health, we want to make sure that we are providing mental health dollars, not only starting at the early years, that zero to five age range, to help them with their total mental health, but as they move towards being an adult as well. I noticed the budget here today, the Senate allows the counties that had risk pool money in their mental health and disability pools to carry that over for another year. I know your budget cuts out about $2.6 million. That particularly affects Polk County and Clinton County. And I don't mean to single out those two counties, but I'm going to address Polk County in particular. They did not receive any transition funds. So they were already starting out with some concerns in regards to the delivery, the ability to continue delivery to the number of individuals there. That risk pool dollars was to help them through that process until we moved into this next fiscal year, until some of their property tax dollars come in. We are now taking $2.6 million away from those two counties. The only way they're going to be able to continue services is to cut them. It's the only way that they're going to be able to do it. And as we move to a new system, why do you start out as a deficit? Why do we start out as a deficit? I thought we wanted to move forward to make sure that people were getting the services that they were needing, and that we were wanting to move towards broadening that out to at some point, brain injury population. I don't see how that gets done when we're coming out with those cuts. I know your bill also includes the supplemental for Medicaid and for the adoption subsidy. One area it does not address is the Iowa Cares portion and the claims for Iowa City. My concern is you're going to tell them you're going to have to end up eating, what is it, close to $10 million if we don't have that language in there, $5 to $10 million. That is of concern to me. So I think we need to address that as well. We look at our child welfare providers. We want them, they're in all of our communities. They service our children. We want to make sure that we have good, qualified individuals that are working with those kids. The turnover rate is significantly high. We want to make sure we can retain those individuals. Not providing that rate increase, we're going to see more turnover and more places closed. And if we don't have places within the state of Iowa, like Orchard Place, Tanager Place, and some of those, we're going to pay a higher rate shipping them out of state so that they can receive the services they need. Again, I think that's the wrong direction that we want to go. In regards to some of the funding, I noticed that under the Medicaid area that we are doing some shifting with our healthcare transformation account of where we're putting dollars and moving it all. Instead of putting that initial $106 into the healthcare transformation account and the rest into the general fund, we're moving it all into the healthcare transformation account. I think that's a bit of smoke and mirrors, and for legislators here who want and talk about transparency, this does not really providing transparency because we're taking money out of the general fund and we're shifting it to an offline account to say, hey, our state expenditures are less than the previous year. Well, the only reason it's doing it is because you've shifted them to another account out of the general fund, but you're still utilizing those dollars. I think that we want to be as transparent as possible to the constituents that we serve, so I think that is another wrong direction that we are going. I could go on and on. I also have concerns on some of the cost containment measures. I do know that the Senate passed those as well, and that's what your budget does as well, Representative Heaton. But I do have some serious concerns with those cost containment measures, and we'll be working with you and my counterparts on the through the process here as we move forward. So I'm going to encourage folks to vote no on the amendment today and on final passage.
Chair recognizes Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You should have called on me before you called on Representative Heddens, because it's hard to follow that. But I do have maybe one line of questioning for Representative Heaton. And I just got this 119-page strike after, so I was took me a while to find the part I was looking at. But I think it's on page 92 in the bill, the strike after amendment. Medicaid fraud fund, I'm questioning from the information that we heard yesterday from Representative Rogers that there, you know, there's Medicaid fraud out there to the tune of $1 billion, and I don't know why we're taking $4,160,796 from a Medicaid fraud account, if I'm reading that right, and maybe I'm not, but that's just a concern, and it fits inside that $1.126 billion number on page 92. Maybe you could tell me more about that, or am I reading that wrong? It's on my spreadsheet, it's a negative number, so it says you're shifting funding from Medicaid fraud account, shifting it out. Am I reading that right?
Well, we're helping to pay for Medicaid. Is there anything wrong with that?
Well,
if we collect the money from them and get the money from them, we reinvest it back into the Medicaid account.
That's what, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, we just heard about this $1 billion yesterday, and it seems like that we need to chase that down. You're saying once we recover it, we can spend it elsewhere. That's what you're saying.
Put it back into Medicaid, sure.
Well, the negative numbers on the spreadsheet makes me question that, because there's other areas that are just zeros, and you're taking that out. How much is in there? You're zeroing that out?
I don't have the slightest idea how much money is in there.
Do you disagree that we have $1 billion of Medicaid fraud out there? I mean, that's what we heard yesterday.
Oh, I don't know. I don't think there's $1 billion worth of Medicaid fraud in our state, no.
Okay. Well, I just had that question, and I just, on page 92 of 119-page bill, I just raised that question. So thank you for your answer. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair recognizes Representative Garrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to back up here just a little bit and talk about the Hyde Amendment since that was brought up. I think there's some misconceptions about exactly what the Hyde Amendment says. I think everybody knows the Hyde Amendment is a federal law, and it has to do with funding of abortions. And there are basically two parts to it. The first part says no Medicaid money should be used to fund abortions. And there's a second part that says, however, for cases where the life of the mother is at stake, rape or incest, you can use Medicaid money. It doesn't say you have to. It says you can. And it also goes on to say that states can't use their Medicaid money for abortions, but they can in those cases, and they can use other money outside their Medicaid matching funds if they want to. There's nothing in the Hyde Amendment that says you have to fund any abortions. I think there's a misconception there. So our language is not inconsistent with the Hyde Amendment. And the other point I wanted to make, the language in our bill provides that Medicaid money should be used to willfully or intentionally terminate a human life. And the suggestion was made that you're not going to cover situations where the life of the mother is at stake and we're saving the mother. My opinion would be, and I think the intent of this provision is, if the life of the mother is at stake and you are treating the mother to save her life and you unintentionally or not willfully in that process terminate the pregnancy, that's not a violation of this provision. It's only if you do it willfully. So I just want to try to clarify those points. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chair recognizes Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, we've discussed a lot about the dollars that are in the bill, and Representative Heaton, I appreciate your work and understanding that there's some work to do, because I do believe that there are areas that are underfunded that will make Iowa an unhealthier place to be. And I don't think that's our goal. We're going to spend some time this afternoon on that, and it's something I need to work on. But, you know, clearly this amendment endangers the lives of Iowa women. I mean, that's just the bottom line. Whatever the federal law is, you know, whatever money is in the bill, this amendment endangers the lives of Iowa women, and it also re-victimizes some Iowa women that have experienced, you know, horrible situations. In the last year, Medicaid paid for medical assistance for 5 Iowa women that would have lost their lives if they had not had that assistance. 5 Iowa women just last year would have had their lives in danger should this amendment have been law. And to me, that's unconscionable. This room is not the place for us to be making medical decisions about what care is appropriate for Iowans. Those decisions are made in doctor's offices and hospitals, at family meetings. This room is not the appropriate place to make the decision, and we're not the appropriate people to be making those decisions for Iowans. But it goes beyond, I think, the situation and circumstances that we're talking about as well. The way that the amendment is written, it also, I believe, would negate decisions that Iowans have made about the end of their lives. Iowans have made decisions through medical powers of attorney and other decisions with their family to remove a feeding tube, to not provide life-sustaining assistance. And the language in this amendment would negate those legally binding documents. And so I think that's something that we also need to focus on, whether or not Iowans and Iowans' families can choose to discontinue life support if that's their choice. So I'm going to vote no on the amendment and no on the bill. I'm sure that's no great surprise to anyone, but I think it's important that we think about what kinds of decisions we're trying to make for Iowans that are best left made between Iowans and their families and their medical providers. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there any other questions? Chair recognizes Representative Dunkel. Are there any other questions on the amendment? Chair recognizes Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ladies and gentlemen of the committee, I have concerns too after what Representative Heddens talked about with the cuts to the cessation programs, what we're doing to providers in this bill. But then when we're talking about sequestration cuts and what's happening to seniors, we need to more than ever be front and center on these, and I don't think this bill does it. But I do want to go back to some of the comments that have been made. I think Representative Ronnie Marquardt sort of nailed it on the head. The whole idea of doing cost containment through C-sections, my partner for 32 years has had four children. Two of them were done by emergency C-sections. And just so everybody understands, a vaginal birth, you have 6 weeks leave, and for a cesarean section, it's 8 weeks. And the bottom line is, these are medical decisions to avoid medical malpractice, to allow physicians to make those decisions when they do C-sections and when they don't. And to sit there and think that people are actually going through a major surgical procedure versus actually doing a vaginal birth, I just think those, again, go back to what Representative Olson said, which is, it's a decision that should be made between a family and their doctor. And you know, this leads to the last argument. We have a change here, and there's a disagreement on what the Hyde Amendment says. But when you take a look at C-sections and what we're doing to other people in this bill, this isn't just a war on women. We're jeopardizing Medicaid funds that will jeopardize every child, every woman, every man, every senior. the possibility of getting Medicaid dollars. And we're having a debate on Medicaid expansion, but we're saying we're going to follow North Dakota because they're a trailblazer on this issue. You know, the bottom line is those are medical decisions that should be left between a physician and their patient. And ironically, we're saying, okay, we won't pay for it. Somebody else is going to pay for it. The hospital's going to eat the cost. We've all heard the argument in here for years. People who don't have health insurance or aren't getting reimbursement, that bill gets passed on to all of us that do have health insurance. That's why you see insurance companies talking about 20 and 30% rate increases, because the indigent care that walks through those doors every day. And now we're saying, if you just look at the last year, that there's 5 women that will have to risk their lives. Again, it rolls down to a decision between a doctor, their provider, and the patient. But you take a look at this bill. Representative Heaton, I understand what you're saying, that you had a budget target. But when you take a look at this whole bill, whether it's this language in the bill about making medical decisions for people, whether it's about cost containment for C-sections to try to limit cost when it's a surgical procedure that doctors make decisions on, I don't think this is something that you would fit in the category of being in the area that it's in the area of a plastic surgeon. It's in the delivery of a human life. And on the one side, we're saying you aren't going to do any of these procedures over here, but we're going to contain the costs of what you can do over here on the other side. We should be leaving all of these decisions, between a physician and the patient. And when you take a look at the other cuts that I've talked about, that Representative Hedden's talked about, this bill is one of the easiest no votes I've ever casted. Thank you.
Are there any other questions on the amendment? Chair recognizes Representative Heaton for closing remarks on Amendment 1973 to Senate File 446.
Well, I appreciate all the comments that were made today, and I just want to remind the body that this is a work in progress. As we move to the floor, we will have further discussion on this bill with all of our fellow legislators in the House. But eventually, this bill will go to a Senate House Conference Committee, and a lot of the things that you have said today will be addressed, and try to come up with a bill that will carry both the House and Senate so we can send it to the governor. I would like to make a comment on the cesarean section. If you would look at the language very carefully, it says it prohibits coverage for elective, non-medically necessary cesarean section. We really feel that natural birth So that's the way the language reads in the bill. We're not trying to get in between an emergency procedure or a medically necessary C-section. But we are saying that perhaps one should really examine whether or not the C-section is necessary before it's performed. To have a C-section just for convenience purposes maybe should be thought about a little more. But anyway, we can talk about it further. I would imagine we'll revisit this conversation on the floor again. And like I say one more time, I appreciate all the input that we got this morning in subcommittee and on our full committee today. And with that, this is the amendment to House Senate File 446. And I ask for your support.